Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for November 22nd, 2011. In this edition, we review 2011 security threats and security defenses with James Line of Sophos.
You know, we're casually letting a lot of stuff into our environments, you know, the cloud, mobile devices, all these new platforms. All of that could lead to a casual, inadvertent loss of control of the basics, which might open us up again to kind of previously thwarted cyber attacks.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. We're nearing the end of 2011, and as we do every year, we'll look back on the year that was. More mobile security threats, malware that's a bit more advanced, hacktivism attacks. All of these threats have existed over the last several years, but we've seen much more of it in 2011. And we'll also talk about security defenses and whether they're keeping pace with many of these attack vectors. Joining us in the studio is James Line. He's Director of Technology Strategy at Sophos. James, thanks so much for being here.
A pleasure. Thank you.
So let's start off. You were here not too long ago, just after Black Hat, I believe. You were addressing some of the issues that were raised in Sophos software by a researcher at Black Hat, some security issues, and you said there would be a series of updates. Can you bring us up to date on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you recall, there were a number of issues that we identified as valid that needed to be remedied in our software, the majority of which have actually now been deployed and fixed in a variety of maintenance releases. And we've got a couple of bigger projects still running in our engineering team to make sure that we're updating our technology and keeping it all secure. And again, anyone that's worried about that, there is a statement on our website which outlines the best practices that will ensure you're not vulnerable. And just to reassure people that we continue to take this stuff seriously on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm. And how have your customers responded at this point? And have you been in contact with many of your customers? And
yes, we proactively reached out to customers to reassure them that, you know, this paper taken out of context may imply that, you know, it's the end of the universe, you're going to be hacked. but providing you're doing the following things, actually you're protected through defense in depth. Okay. So we've proactively reached out to our customer base. And we've also, as I say, remedied lots of the issues raised in maintenance releases and continue to update that statement. So I think at this point, our customers are feeling confident. I've seen the numbers of queries dying down.
Excellent. So let's get into what we're here to talk about, which is, you know, we're coming towards the end of 2011. There have been a number of major security threats, major security incidents over the last year, as always. Well, how would you sum up 2011 in terms of the threat landscape?
So I guess there are two major areas of change for me. You know, in the mainstream threat space, I think there's been the obvious trend of more malware, mm-hmm. Diversification of targets. You know, we're now over 150,000 individual pieces of malicious code every day, 60% increase since December last year, and climbing. So the volume of malicious code and the quality is increasing. So, you know, that's the kind of obvious trend, same every year, but escalating. I think the more interesting area is the throwback to hacktivism. You know, this step away from purely financially oriented malware to kind of hacks trying to create a political point. Data breaches that have been published externally, you know, showing all the data to embarrass companies, or hacks to draw attention to a particular kind of political point or regime.
Yeah, you're referring to Anonymous and Lulzsec.
Exactly. Right. Anonymous, Lulzsec, you know, some of the Sony breaches, mm-hmm. you know, those kinds of attacks have been a really interesting throwback to the days of old in the InfoSec community.
You know, the interesting part of that, I'm glad you mentioned this, is that it seems like in some cases the media just jumps right on this. And some of this is some serious stuff. In the case of Lulzsec, I think they posted some police officer names and information. In other cases, I think it's just, you know, oh, here's what so and so said on the on some web forum of some kind, and you know, they said that they broke into a website and stole this information. There's no follow-up.
Right. Yeah, it's a really interesting mixed bag of cases here. And, you know, if you break them down, there have been incidents where, you know, the media have kind of jumped on this and gone, oh, you know, Anonymous has taken down XYZ police organization. And what they're really talking about is, you know, fairly normal distributed denial of service attack. Mm-hmm. And there's been an interesting tendency amongst some CISOs and boards to reprioritize security spend and focus towards these incidents because they're covered in the press. In some cases, distorting focus towards issues that are actually, you know, high probability but really low impact, as opposed to incidents that are potentially much, much more serious.
So if you analyze, for example, an enterprise should be able to analyze the business impact of their website being DDoSed, going down.
Right.
And if operations can continue, it shouldn't be a high priority if the business operations continue, are able to continue.
Right. I mean, you have to analyze your risks in every different case. It's mm-hmm. different for each business. But let me give you one example. You know, in the UK, the Serious Organized Crime Agency was taken offline. Their website was DDoSed for a number of hours. And, you know, this is a personal one for me because I made the controversial statement on the BBC that actually I didn't think that soccer should be investing money in trying to mitigate that more strongly, because, you know, that would take up a lot of taxpayer funds. It didn't really critically impair their ability to deliver their function. It was slightly embarrassing, but frankly, you know, they really couldn't stop it if they tried, and they should be spending their security funds much more on encryption and protecting case data and PII as opposed to this big kind of scary distributed denial of service attack that the media frenzied around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's very critical that amidst this hacktivism and a lot of media coverage, you know, let's keep to the basics, let's keep level heads and make sure that we're making our security investments based on a risk register of our true business priorities. That's a big learning from 2011 that I expect we'll probably have to continue to practice in 2012.
Mm-hmm. In the first half of your Some Nation the security threats, you mentioned more malware. Is malware becoming more sophisticated at this point? Is it pretty much remaining the same? You know, we do hear about, for example, Dooku, which shared some code with Stuxnet, and that got a lot of attention. How would you sum up how malware has changed or evolved?
So I think there's still a lot of dumb malware.
Okay.
There's still a high volume. There's a whole lot of dumb malware. Okay. You know, there's still a lot of reliance on essentially, you know, glorified social engineering, tricking people through variations of phishing schemes into opening up very basic malware that, you know, steals data or steals credit card details. A lot of this stuff is just simple malware being regenerated by the bad guys at high speed, you know, a new sample every minute, you know, making it hard for the vendors to catch up. So that in itself is an interesting challenge. But what we have seen is, you know, in the top 1%, some pretty clever and original malware, which is interesting because 3 or 4 years ago, the majority was really quite silly Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see some more intellectually capable malware appearing at that high end. And I think another 2011 learning is it's not just about the PC anymore. More Mac malware, yes. But attacks going after the likes of SCADA control systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the majority by any means, but an interesting change in direction. And we should remember that all these other devices we have in our lives, these embedded systems, are potentially vulnerable to attack too. Now the bad guys have got a taste for blood in that area. We might see more of that in the next couple of years, and we should be ready.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you mentioned SCADA systems. How serious do you, and what was your initial thoughts when Dooku surfaced? This is the Trojan that shared the code with Stuxnet. Is it a precursor to a massive attack or a major attack as other security vendors have mentioned?
I guess I was a little disappointed with how that incident was kind of described and covered in some cases, because there was a lot of speculation about what could happen and how this attack could be repurposed to this huge new second wave attack that was going to take down all these command and control systems, all these kind of critical infrastructure systems, and do all this damage,
mm-hmm.
much of which without any evidence. So, you know, I was kind of disappointed by that mass speculation when the original Dooku payload was actually fairly uninteresting and unexciting. Still, you have to recognize that this is another piece of malware going after critical national infrastructure successfully, like Stuxnet, and we can expect more of it. And I think, as we've discussed before, the big problem with malicious code right now is, let's reel back to Comficker. You know, I had journalists calling me left, right, and center saying, okay, tell me, what is Comficker going to do on the 1st of April?
All right.
I don't know. It's got a command and control system. Whatever the guy types into his keyboard, it's going to do. As far as I know, Comficker might change everyone's desktop background to a picture of a kitten. You know, that's the predictability.
And of course, nothing happened, right?
Nothing really happened. I mean, it's a serious threat, you know, caused downtime, caused problems, sometimes delivered fake AV, but there was no massive April 1st end of the universe IT event. So, you know, I think we need to be a little bit objective about Dooku, recognize how it was targeted, but I think when people start throwing around the cyber warfare phrase without particular evidence or proof, it's another example of that, you know, media hyping we discussed earlier that may twist priorities.
It was still a fascinating piece of malware. I mean, this is a Trojan that was able to, once it penetrated a network of a, and it was found on manufacturers of equipment involved in industrial control systems. And it could just basically suck up as much information as it could, just like a vacuum.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely something for us to take note of in the industry and recognize the direction. You know, more broadly, you know, moving beyond the kind of specific Dooku example, I think there's actually a ton of areas in critical national infrastructure, you know, mobile networks, you know, broader computer systems that haven't grown up in the mainstream computing environment that PCs have for the past 20 years. And there are lots of basic security issues rather than, you know, super intelligent high-end threats that are waiting to be exercised. You know, people running default passwords, as we saw with Stuxnet, you know, USB keys enabling people to jump the AirGap network. You know, lots of failure of patching as a result of the assumption the network was air-gapped. So I think this is an area we do need to take a very close, hard look and make sure that we're treating security basics as seriously in those environments as the PC. Because you're right, you know, irrespective of all the overhyping and speculation, you know, that is a piece of malware that was, you know, relatively effective at hitting those systems. We're likely to see more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you said, it's the little things that can turn into big problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, one more interesting 2011 example. A couple of worms going back to old day practices like password guessing of remote desktop. Interesting to see that that's still a problem in lots of environments and that, you know, we've still kind of not necessarily got complete control of those basics like patching and passwords.
I know, I think. Doesn't Graham Cluley, doesn't he have a great video that tries to I think it does a nice job, and it's got a lot of views on how to have a very secure password, but it just people just don't do it. It's too much.
It's still a big challenge, and you know, every year we get into this debate in the industry about what the alternative is and how we can come up with these new systems. But, you know, passwords are what we've got. They're cross-platform and everyone's using them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Graham's video is definitely worth watching. You know, I think we should be continuing to enforce and advise users to look at content like that and get a secure password. And just as a side note on awareness, this year I've talked to a lot of people in the CISO community about their acceptable use policies. Big point, we all need to be making sure we're updating our awareness training and our acceptable use policies. Mm-hmm. I've done reviews of a lot of businesses' AUPs, and you'll find that they go to extreme lengths to talk about passwords and patching for the PC. No mention of social media, no mention of mobiles, no mention of those same practices applying to a broader set of systems. You know, let's remember awareness is a good weapon in the cybersecurity battle and make sure that our policy and our end user training to staff also talks about those other platforms as well.
Summing up 2011, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on whether these defenses are keeping pace with the attacks that we and the kinds of malware that we were just talking about. Are defenses keeping pace? And in 2011, were there any any major improvements to security defenses?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one for me. So that there are a number of what I call legacy technologies that most people still put the majority of their security defense eggs in the basket, mm-hmm. should we say. The age-old battle of signature AV and content-based AV, you know.
And we've seen this, the surveys that show that enterprises seem to always say, oh, yeah, we have that. It's our antivirus. That protects. That's
absolutely. Protects we know. I mean, we all talk about it in the industry, but we
over-reliance.
Know we still have a problem of over-reliance, right? Yeah. We know that's the case. Now, when you're getting 150,000 samples a day and growing, you know, let's say next year we hit 250,000. When you look at the techniques the bad guys are using to generate this stuff, no reason that couldn't be the case or higher. Those content-based technologies, no matter how generic and proactive they are, struggle with that volume. And the security vendor community, including Sophos, has been releasing new technologies that are more focused on contextual security, using behavior and reputation, using cloud lookups, using the fact that it's always bad for Adobe Acrobat XYZ dodgy version to start writing to the run key in System 32, more generic rule-based systems. So there's a lot of new technology controls that have come out over 2010 and 2011 to help deal with this issue. And if you're running them effectively, then you're in a good place. Mm-hmm. There's more malware, but on percentage terms, you're doing a good job. You've raised the bar. The biggest concern for me at the moment is the consumption gap. There's a lot of enterprises and medium and small businesses even that are dependent on that small set of security controls. The industry is releasing all this new stuff, and it's not getting adopted. So for me, the big thing that we have to really fix for kind of security defense efficiency is making sure that companies are running, multiple layers of protection. They're using HIPS, they're using behavioral control, they've got good network security, they've got good patching, good web security. In this world where there's so much malware and a world of targeted attackers, where you don't really know where the next attack's going to come from, we almost need to hail back to the days of defense in depth. The more layers we put on top, the more layers of netting we put on top, the smaller the holes the bad guys get to punt their attacks through. The problem is, of course, that's directly opposed to the budgetary situation in many cases, mm-hmm. and it's directly opposed to the resources available. So it harks back to one of my big themes of simplification and integration, and I hope that in 2012, that's a message that we can get through to the CISO community much, much more. We've got to reduce reliance on traditional technologies.
Interesting. And you mentioned budgets, and with the way the global economy has been, has that stymied technology investments?
I think, so it's still growing. I think there's still a lot of chopping and changing going, people looking at new security technologies. I'm talking to CISOs on a daily basis who are looking at mobile security. It's a big, big focus area. There's a lot of discussion around, virtualization. But a lot of the security projects seem to be coming from new technologies as opposed to the continuous drive to improve security at home in the existing landscape. I think the economic conditions have caused some challenges for new technologies. People are more resource constrained and more kind of trying to address the basics. But there is still movement as people recognize, I guess as a result of 2011's mass regime of scary data breaches, that security is still important. Mm-hmm. So not a bad landscape, but it would be hard to say there hasn't been some impact.
One area that you didn't mention that at one point was driving a lot of adoption of new security technologies is compliance and different regulations. Are we seeing any more of that factor driving adoption of new technology?
So compliance is definitely a driver in larger enterprises where they know they're likely to get audited. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, propensity for suppliers or customers to put compliance requirements into the contract so that, they're demanding you must meet Mass 201 CMR or PCI or whatever is applicable, depending on where you do business. Mm-hmm. The medium and small size company feeling the heat of that much, much less. Now, compliance has given a lot of CISOs in larger enterprises a bit of a blank check to write to get some of the security projects they knew they needed to do before done, which has been great. But much of that was, you know, end of 2010, beginning of 2011. There's been a little bit of a slow in the compliance regime through the mid and end of 2011. We haven't seen huge updates to the regulations. However, I'm expecting that's something that's going to pick up again quite a lot in 2012. I know there's big changes to the EU regulations coming, and I know there's a lot of discussion about Mass 201 CMR regulations being mirrored in other states as well. So I think the, you know, the compliance is still there and likely to become a more prominent theme, but still very much at the high end. And one note I would make, compliance is great. It's useful. It assures minimum standards. But equally, we've got to do a lot of work to make it accessible to small and medium companies. I talk to a lot of mid-sized companies that frankly can't afford to pass the extensive, long, horrifying document and difficult legal language to figure out what their obligations are. Mm-hmm. Let's just make this a little easier if we can.
Interesting. That's always been, seems to have always been a tough problem.
Yeah, and I guess the regulation challenge as well is laws move in years, cyber criminals move in days. Mm-hmm. Trying to come up with a generalized framework for what good security is in regulation is always going to be a little bit at odds with reality. But, you know, if it can give us some basic guidelines and get people considering the issue, help escalate it to the boardroom, that's an effective weapon for, you know, cybersecurity professionals within a business to get what they know needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. 2012, any predictions for next year? This is the time of year, and here in the U.S., of course, we're headed into Thanksgiving, and we get a lot of prediction pieces from security vendors. A lot of it is much of the same, you know, social media, cloud computing, mobile devices.
So I think we're going to see a critical national infrastructure attack where they're going to take down smart grid, turn off your oven, and thus your turkey is going to be very thaw.
God.
No, okay, jokes aside, although that might be an interesting attack vector in years to come as we put more smart grid into our homes and power systems. I think really a lot of it is more of the same. You know, I think we're going to see massively increased volume of malware continuing. I do think that we are erring on the edge of more focus from the bad guys on mobile devices. I think that the biggest challenge in 2012 for CISOs in security is going to be avoiding massive regression in security posture through adoption of new technologies. You know, we're casually letting a lot of stuff into our environments, you know, the cloud, mobile devices, all these new platforms, you know, five different operating systems now instead of my traditional Microsoft one, maybe a bit of Apple as well. Mm-hmm. All of that could lead to a casual, inadvertent loss of control of the basics, which might open us up again to kind of previously thwarted cyber attacks. So for me, the most interesting thing in 2012 isn't the super high-end attack, which I'm sure we'll see some of those as well, but it's that overall regression in security due to failure in the basics.
Well, James Lyon of Sophos, thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.